You are listening to the Punk News Podcast episode. I don't even know what episode this is. I'm going to take a look real quick. But while I'm looking, I'm here with M. Moore. M. Moore. Oh. Big day for M. Moore. Big day for M. Moore. M. Moore. Cover story. Physical cover story. M. Physical cover story.
Physical and digital.
Physical and digital cover story for Exclaim Magazine, Canada's biggest music magazine. Interviewing M. Moore, interviewing Finn Wolfhard of Stranger Things and the Finn Wolfhard band. What's the name of his band, M?
Finn Wolfhard.
Oh, Finn Wolfhard, the band.
And yeah, he's a solo thing. He was in other bands too. Like he was in Calpurnia and
So this is just Finn Wolfhard. Finn Wolfhard solo. And yeah, so is it a Q&A? Is it a paragraph style? What kind of interview is it?
It is a paragraph style interview.
And did you interview him on phone?
It was a lot of fun to do.
Did you interview him on in phone, in person? How'd the interview go?
Over Zoom, and it went really well. He's very, very, very nice. So I'm glad we were able to get it set up, and it was really fun talking with him. And I hope that I captured the spirit of the conversation. Like could have talked for so much longer. So it was nice to have the half hour anyway. And I think it turned out really well. I'm really stoked. I haven't got the physical copy yet. Exclaims are free around Canada. So like they're usually at music stores, like record stores or Long and McQuaid's and stuff like that. So I'm going in the next couple days to pick up a couple physical copies and it looks sick. So like, yeah, I'm really, really, really happy with it. And obviously with everyone who helped kind of make it happen and, you know, all the editors and everyone who like does the formatting and stuff. It looks so happy. You're so good. I'm so happy with it. It's just so surreal because it's like I've been writing for Exclaim for like as a freelance writer for a little bit now, and like they're amazing. Like I love working with them, and you know, it's something that I've been reading since I was like at least 13, like maybe 12. I have like a bunch of old copies like stored somewhere, so to every time I have something that is on the website or in print, it just it's really, really, really special.
Well, that's extremely cool. And I'm looking at the cover right now. It's got Finn with kind of like pinkish heart kind of designs behind him. Very punchy first sentence here by M. Finn Wolfhard was born in 2002, but he still feels like an honorary 80s kid. And M got the 80s shortening correct. Most people get it wrong, but M got it correct. Very cool. M, did they pitch it to you or did you pitch it to them or did they assign it to you?
They pitched it to me and I was like, hell yeah, like I'm definitely up for this. So yeah, big shout out to Alex who helped edit and make it what you see it today. You know, it's great.
About 1,500 words it's looking like here?
I think it's about 2,000.
2,000. All right. Large feature. Very cool. If you Google Finn Wolfhard Exclaim, it pops right on up. Number one thing. Finn Wolfhard gets by with a little help from his friends by M. Moore. M. Moore, congratulations and salutations.
Thank you.
Very cool for your very first cover, physical cover feature. Very cool.
It's my second, actually.
Oh, it's your second. Oh, what was the first?
It's my first for Exclaim.
What was the first?
It's my second in general. I did a cover. Excuse me. I did a cover story for Reverie earlier in the year for Piss, and that's also digital and physical.
So, Em, what's the plan here?
Really excited.
We're moving up the ladder. We're moving on up. What's the plan here? What are you thinking?
Love to write a book or books. You know, I think that's like the ultimate goal, but definitely like want to keep talking to like cool people and music and, you know, writing, writing different stuff. And it means a lot too, to be able to write for Canadian publications, and have that be a thing that exists. But yeah, like world domination, man.
Well, very cool.
I want to write for everyone.
Again.
Thank you so much.
And so everyone, check that on out. Finn Wolfhard gets by with a little help from his friends. The people
the
in my life
really
are really
good.
Ride or die, says the actor and musician. Would you agree that truly famous people and true stars tend to be more responsible, more polite, and more on their game than the up and comings and the wannabes.
I think it depends on the person, but just in the people that I've interacted with, like I would say, I haven't had anybody who is like considered a big name be rude to me. Everyone has been very kind and very gracious.
I would say it does not depend on the person. I would say the reason truly famous people have been able to get there, among many other reasons, luck, talent, knowing the right people, making the right decisions, is because they are on their A game. I've never interviewed a rock star and not have a good interview. They're always on their A game, they're ready to deliver, and they're always on time. And I tell a lot of my clients that, and some of them listen and some of them don't. That's not the only way to get big, or not even, we'll say, to make a living off of art. That's not the only way. I mean, I'm sorry. That's not the only thing that will get you there, but it is a required thing to get you there. I've never interviewed a truly famous person and had them been rude or just have bullshit answers. They've always been ready to party, if that makes sense. Sometimes too much so.
Oh,
Like when I interviewed
yeah.
Mark Mothersbaugh, I got in like one question in 30 minutes, which really isn't that bad. If it was a Q&A, it would have been a little tough. But they always bring good answers, and they're always on time, so just something to think about. Anyway, M, congrats
True.
again. And
Thank
M is an
you.
exclaim. This is Punk News Podcast episode. I just had it pulled up. 739. And we're
Oi.
really only a few away from big 750. I feel like it's a game show time, M. What do you think? Game show time?
Yes, I'm very up for game show time.
I think we gotta play Punk's Points and maybe $10,000 Pyramid. What do you think?
Yes, yeah, because
Any other games we
Punk's
should play?
Points is so much fun.
The
Pyramid
challenge with
Links,
Punk Points is we have to balance the competitors because usually one person just dominates. But what I always make the questions too tough because I know the answers. So I'm like, that's easy. I know, but I gotta make like the first three gimmies for me because I already know them, and then the last two hard. You see what I'm saying? So like usually like
Yeah.
we have Mikey Ergo, and Mikey Ergo just destroys everybody because he knows. But and do you remember the one where we had this, like where the slits was a category and people didn't even know who the slits were? Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I
I'm
do.
like,
That was
how do you not know who the
very,
slits
yeah.
are? So we gotta do Punk's Points. We should
Yes.
do $10,000 Pyramid. Should we do any other games, do you think?
I think we should have one more. We should do like a three, like a trilogy of
Yeah, I
game.
agree. We could do.
What would be a good one?
Well, we have done the newlywed game with band members, which is fun. The only problem there is
Yeah.
that's a lot of setup, and I almost feel like that's its own episode because there's so much like setup and change over there,
Yeah, I would agree with you. Like that would be a fun like one-off episode.
The problem is, and we haven't really done any like one like we haven't done album battle in a long time. We haven't done any like one-offs in a while, and in part it's because we're having on so many guests lately. Which I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I like having guests on, but I also like not having guests on. So I feel we've been a
Yeah.
little guest heavy lately, but we've got a couple cool ones coming up. I'll just say we got Stephen Egerton of All in the Descendants coming on, and we've got some other cool people coming on too. So I'm excited for Stephen Egerton, M, because I'm gonna do No Holds Barred. I'm tired of us, and by us I mean me, like being very PR, like, wow, wasn't it great? You've got a new album out. Isn't that awesome? You're great. Wow, which I agree. Like when we have Danny Miller Surfboard, I love Danny Miller Surfboard, so of course I'm doing that,
Yeah.
But I think with Stefan, I think I'm gonna do No Holds Barred. You know what I mean? Like, what's Keith really like? You know what I mean? Like, I think we're gonna do old school Tom Snyder 1970s style interview, the golden age of interviews, and the mid to late 70s.
Ooh, okay. Well, like just with the game thing, when Danny Miller was on, we played like a couple games and those were really fun. So
I
we could
agree.
like
I agree, but I
do
feel as though those are better
expand
for
one.
interviews because there's no real winners in those. I love those games. I think we should play them more often, But also, M,
Yeah.
the key with that is Danny Miller is down to clown. If you get like a stiff quarter,
True.
you're playing punk or not punk, they'll be like, I guess rubber duckies are not punk. And you're like, why? Because everyone likes rubber duckies, where like Danny Miller had some funny stuff to say, So.
Yeah.
So what's the third game we well let's think about it. Let's think about the
I'll
third
think
game that we
about
should
it.
play. But in the
Yes.
meantime, oh, this is going to be a freestyle episode, so it's going up in about 5 minutes after we record it. And then you'll be pleased to know, I think I'm just going to buy another Mac because I've got two
Oh.
computers. I've got my normal PC, which I use every day, and I mix the
Yeah.
episodes on my broken down, how old is this thing now? 18-year-old Mac, and which if you
Oh,
it is
nice.
literally falling apart. If you saw this thing, like you wouldn't believe it works. Like I'm pulling up
Ooh.
right now. Like the bottom tray has like warped, so like all the digital parts are literally like spilling out of the bottom. Like
Oh
several
my
of the
God.
keys don't work. I mean, I can't believe this thing is. I can't. I mean, I love this thing only because it's treated me so well. But it's. I mean, I can buy a used Mac for like 350 or $400. So I gotta just buy a used Mac so I can record the show on the Mac instead of recording on my PC, and then we can just whip episodes together and get them up and get rid of the stupid delay that we have that I hate. But I hate mixing. It takes me so long to mix. So I should just spend the $300, $400 and buy a new Mac or a used Mac, which is what I'm gonna do.
That's going to be
Anyways.
great. You're going to notice a huge difference. It's going to be so
Huge difference in
nice.
the podcast people. Huge difference. Well, it'll be fun to be able to play songs again. You know what I mean? The only reason we
Yeah.
don't play that many songs is because it's a pain. Because that means I got to mix it, which is a pain. Or, and I meant to look into this a little while ago, podcast. I tried looking at podcasting platforms where we could literally just record directly and play music live, you know, and then it's mixed when
Oh,
we're done. But
yeah. That'd be fun.
like the only things I could find were like $50 a week. I'm like, you know, I'm not spending that on the Punk News podcast, you know. So maybe I was looking at like the wrong thing or something. I don't know. But that would make us more pro, you know.
It would.
So see,
That
I
would be
thought
a
it would be
lot of
like
fun.
20 bucks a month, but it's like it was like $200 a month. I'm like, well, screw that. But
Me.
especially since we don't make any money at the po we pay money to be on the Punk News podcast, frankly.
Oh,
So
maybe we could do it on Twitch.
maybe. Can you play
Because I
music on
think Twitch
Twitch?
is free.
Can you play music on Twitch?
Maybe you might get copyright infringement. Let me see.
See that's the thing. Like what I want to do is record a podcast and be able to play music live on the podcast, and that way it's mixed as soon as we're done, you see. Just like a radio show.
Yeah, that would be great.
And that way we could interview bands and be like, this is going up in like 3 minutes, you know? And we don't have
Oh,
PR people saying like, and also, A, we don't have PR people saying, oh, Steve talked about his dog. Can you edit that out? And I'm like, well, we don't really do that. I mean, like, nope, it's already up, you know? Or, and also, like, we don't have PR people like sometimes, well, I'll be frank. Sometimes we'll have people on the show that I don't really want to have on, but A, I think maybe the listeners will be interested, or B, a PR person is really pushing them, or C, the deadliest trap of all. You do something nice for someone once, and then you're indebted to doing something nice for them forever, you know? And so sometimes we have on people that I'm not that psyched to have on, not that often. And so that I have less inspiration to mix it. And then like 2 months go by, they're like, did you mix that episode yet? And I'm like, oh, not yet. You know, so anyways, I'm lollygagging. We've got a fair amount to cover, but actually the first part of tonight's episode might not be that huge, but it'll be a little big. M's problem is that she's always too polite. M needs to be more direct, especially on the Punk News podcast. M, if you disagree with something I say, you need to say I disagree. You need to do it, M. You must do it.
Okay.
And if I'm getting, oh, go ahead. What's that?
I said okay.
And if I'm getting bored, if you're getting bored with my long-winded tales, let me know. Okay. So, anyways,
Sure.
it
Yeah.
was Summer Soiree 9. What's today?
Woo!
Today's Tuesday. Summer Soiree 9, 3 days ago, last Saturday. And the way Summer Soiree 9 started, Summer Soiree 9 started was the exact same Summer Soiree 7. The way Summer Soiree 7 started was I'd done Summer Soiree 6, which was the dwarves and Zorn. And I'm like, I can't ever top this. I can't. It's like the best show ever. So I said, this is Summer
Yeah.
Soiree 6, 7 rather. So I said, I'll email Joe Jack Talcum and say, hey, Joe, you want to do an all Ramones set for the 50th anniversary? And I'm sure he's going to say no because he's not going to learn an entire band set for one dopey show. And he'll say no, and that'll be it. That'll be the end of the summer soirees. So I emailed Joe Jack Talk. I'm like, hey, Joe, you want to do an all Ramones set with your band? And he was like, okay. And then I'm like, oh, I guess I'm back in. So that was summer soiree 7 was all Ramones, you know, for the
Yeah.
Ramones' 50th anniversary. Summer soiree 8 was easy because the dwarves were coming around, and I'd wanted to do dwarves in Schoolie D before. Didn't quite work out. Worked out beautifully this past time. It was amazing. Summer soiree 9, again, I didn't really have a great idea. And then I'm thinking, well, you know, it is the Clash's 50th anniversary. That's kind of a nice sequel to the Ramones' 50th anniversary, you know? And I'm not big on band worship, and I'm not even big on, and I'm really not big on Clash worship, because as much as I love the Clash, and they used to be my favorite punk band of all time, and they're not my very favorite one of all time, or they're one of my favorites. I feel wrong saying they're my favorite punk band these days, but they're one of my favorites for sure. But the Clash are like overly deified. People call like Joe Strummer Saint Strummer, when Joe Strummer was not a saint, and neither was anybody in the band. Neither are the vast majority of people. So I get a little annoyed that the Clash are kind of presented as deities, but also the absolute height of punk rock. And I feel that people espousing that are usually people that really don't know punk that deeply. But then on the other hand, I heard an interview with Jesse Michaels where he was going to on and on about how great the Clash were. And if you don't like the Clash, then you don't get punk rock as a whole. And I'm like, oh, well, who am I to disagree with Jesse? So, Em, the Clash, are they overly celebrated, do you think?
I think they are overly celebrated. I think they're a great punk band. I think they've done a lot of good things in the world, but I do think they're I don't think anyone should be deified.
Do you feel the Clash are deified? Or Joe Strummer.
I feel like Joe Strummer is, but I think that kind of goes with the territory of like, oh well, this is some this band was a lot of people's like first introduction into punk. So they whoever kind of does that takes on a mythical almost status, and then with him passing away quite young, like that also kind of adds to that as well.
I forgot the Clash were my introduction into punk. I told the story a couple times, but I should tell it again real quick. So when I first started getting into music, there was a thing called the BMG Music Club. And when the internet was pretty much brand new, or almost brand new for all intents and purposes, you go in the BMG Music Club, and this is one of those things where you get like eight CDs for a penny, and then every month you had to like buy a CD or something, and so you could go on their website and listen to like 3 second clips of a band, and at the time I didn't know what the UK subs were, but I was vaguely interested in the concept of punk, and so I didn't know the UK subs existed. But in my brain, this band I was hearing was what I now know is sounds like the UK subs, like oi oi oi, Me and the Mites, and so I wanted a punk CD, so I searched Sex Pistols, and BMG
Yeah.
Music said, "We don't have any Sex Pistols, but you might like this." And I suggested Gwar's We Kill Everything. And Gwar sounds nothing like the Sex Pistols, but I didn't know. And of course, I'm a Gwar absolute maniac. And so I clicked on one random Gwar song, which is a song called Baby Raper. And weirdly, in the song
Ooh.
Baby Raper, there's a 3 second section, maybe 5 seconds, where Otis Urungus, for no reason, starts singing in an English Cockney accent like the UK subs. And I'm like, wow, that's the sound that I want, So I ordered the CD, and the CD sounds nothing like that at all. It's actually Gwar's worst CD, and it, like it's not what I sounded like thought it would sound like at all. But because I bought that, BMG then quote offered me a deal, and what it was is if you bought three box CD box sets, they would only charge you the price of one box set. Now, of course, the one box set
Oh.
was crazily overpriced, but if you bought all three and you played it right, you could actually get a really good deal, So, M, the three box sets that I got were Alice Cooper, Life and Crimes, amazing box set. Second box set that I got was Black Sabbath, the album collection, amazing set.
Ooh,
And the third,
very
M,
nice.
Clash on Broadway. And that's the first time that I heard
Oh.
punk, really, or the Clash. And the funny thing about that is when I first started listening, so the first CD is basically the first both versions of the first album. The second CD is Give Enough Rope, London Calling, and Some of Sandinista. And the third CD is a little bit of Sandinista and most of Combat Rock. And when I got it, I loved the third CD the most because it had Rock the Casbah on it. I liked this the first one, which is the punkiest stuff, and didn't really like the second one, which is London Calling. And it took my brain and my taste, a few months to adjust to realize, no, London Calling is probably the best. And that Clash box, that's amazing because it's got a bunch of rarities on it and it's paced great. And so that's how I got into punk rock. So this is kind of a long-winded story. And tell me if I'm getting boring.
Not
And
getting boring.
and also that box set's got an amazing, it's actually got one of the best booklets ever. It's about 50 pages, and it's the oral history of the Clash as told by the Clash. And there's actually
Oh,
an
that's cool.
expanded book that everyone you can get for like $5, I think, of that. Let me see if I can find that. It's one of the best music books there is. It's the oral history of the Clash, but it's not called that. Give me see if I can pull it. Everyone should get it. I got it for like $5 used one time. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. It's pink.
Ooh,
The book
okay.
cover. Let me see if I can find it real
Very
quick.
cool.
Let's see here. Here it is. Oh, it's just called The Clash. Everyone should get that book if you like The Clash or punk. It is the oral history of The Clash. It's a giant book, and it is, well, now it's $18 used. I got mine for five at like some bookstore, but still, for $18, it's one of the best music books you'll ever get. It's amazing. Or you just get the Clash box set for like $5 used, and most of it's in there. Anyways, that's how I got into The Clash, and I have loved The Clash
Yes.
ever since. And I remember, I was 16. I was driving my car. I was listening to the song "London's Burning." And I was going to my friend's party, and I pulled up, and "London's Burning" was playing. Not "London's Calling," "London's Burning." And Kathy Davis was there, and she's like, "What's that music?" And I'm like, "That's the Clash." And I felt real cool because and then to everyone I knew, that sounded very aggressive and nasty. And really, now the Clash to me sounds very pop. But even so, at that time, it was very tough music to me. Anyways,
Sure.
so I actually had the vague idea to make Summer Soiree 9 a Clash tribute show, but I had no idea how to do that. And the fact of the matter, I'm asking a band to learn an entire new set for one show, that's a pretty big request. You know what I mean? That's a pretty big request. Which maybe I don't know
Yeah.
about music because Joe Jack Tackham was like, fine. He's like, sure. Like, so maybe it's not that hard. All I know is I could never remember all those. I'm terrible at remembering lyrics. I could never do that. But so maybe it's just my bias. So anyway, I go to the Swans' final big band show. The Swans are now going to be like solo or acoustic or something. So it was the final Swans tour where they were a full band. Amazing show. Amazing show. I've been told by Swans fans it actually wasn't that good, but to me it was great, you know. And
Yeah.
I ran into Aura of the Slackers and Leftover Crack. And I've known Aura a long time. But I really, you know, got to know him better for the Leftover Crack book, where he acted as kind of the almost as the narrator for the book, because out of the Leftover Crack guys, he's by far the most normal. All the other members are just complete maniacs. And so I know Aura kind of well, you know. I mean, I would definitely say we're friends, especially now. And so I just ran into, apparently he's a huge Swan fan, but I don't know this. And so during the Swan show, Michael Yeara, or Gyra, I think it's Michael Yeara, I call him Michael Gyra, but I think Michael Yeara paused the show to yell at his band because they made a mistake. But and the irony being is, no one would have like this. No one would have any idea if the Swans were making a mistake or not. They could play anything. I wouldn't know if it was right or wrong. I'd be like, "Oh wow, it's the Swans!" So he's like yelling at his band on stage, which is hilarious. And pause here, M. Is it cool that Michael Gira yells at his band on stage, or is that lame? A, you know, if the Rolling Stones are playing and someone messes up, Mick Jagger's not stopping for anything. He's going to see that hurdle and jump over like it's nothing, right? Or
Yes.
M is that Michael Yeara is so in the moment and he cares about the music so much and it's so fragile and so specific that any deviation is a tragedy. Where do you stand on that?
I think that it is a control issue, and I think it's everything must be perfect. And if it is not perfect, then I am going to call it out. And I think that goes with caring about the music, but I think that is at the expense of caring about the band.
So you think it's lame for Michael Yeara to do that?
Yeah.
I agree. I think it's lame. I think you're a musician, be a professional. You know what I mean? You're not that, you know, you're not curing cancer. You're playing a D chord. You know what I mean? Like, so you know what? Be a man, be a woman, whatever, and just smash on through and impress me. You know what I mean? You know, in a job, I'm going way off track here, but when you're a professional that gets hired by people in any, if there's a small error, don't run out and point out that you made an error. That's a terrible idea. You know what I mean? Like,
Oh, yeah.
just act like no one's seen it. You know, if there's a typo in your copy and it goes up on a website, M, don't immediately email the editor. Just hope no one catches on. You know what I mean? Like, you know. Anyways, so M, how careful are you with typos when submitting to your editor?
Very careful.
Yeah,
And that's from punk news stuff.
oh,
Yeah, that's because anytime I do like I write up anything for like interviews or anything like I edit myself and whatever. I am so careful so that way if anyone comes at me, they're not coming at me for an error that I made.
Well,
If that makes sense.
if you're submitting anything freelance, you definitely should be exceptionally careful
Oh
with
yeah.
typos. And honestly, that's one of my weakest points, and I need to improve on that. My brain just fixes them. I just don't see them. You know what I mean? So I need to be more careful with that. It helps for me to print it out and read it in person, you know?
Oh, that's a good tip. Yeah.
So anyways, so back to the thing. So I see R, and Michael Yee was like yelling at his band on stage. And I don't know why. I'm always talking about summer soiree. I'm like, yeah, so I'm thinking about doing summer soiree. I don't really have an idea. I'm thinking maybe a Clash tribute show, but that's a lot of work. And R goes, a Clash tribute show, you say? I'm like, yes. And he's like, did you know that I was trying to form a Clash tribute band a couple years ago? And I was like, you don't say, you know? And I didn't want to commit to anything then, but I'm like, you know what? Let's keep this on doc, but let's not like commit to anything right now, you know? So we watch the show. I go home about 3 or 4 days later. I'm like, "Aura, let's do this. Let's do a Clash tribute show. We got it's just me and Aura. You know what I mean?" So I'm like, "Let's figure this out. It's going to be a lot of work, and you're not going to get paid that much because it's a 200 capacity room. But let's do it." And Aura's like, "Yes, let's do it." So he pretty not immediately, but pretty much immediately pulls in his bandmate Jay, who I always think of Jay of the Slackers, Jay Nugent. But I actually forgot him that before Jay was in the Slackers, he was an Agent 99. And of course, I'm who's an Agent 99?
Agent 99 is.
Aura and Jay, they go way
Yes.
back. I forgot that. Also, Alec of Electric Crack, RIP, and also Doing Your Best. And of course, I'm Doing Your Best is the sister of whom?
I don't know.
Jar Jar Binks, the actor Ahmed Best.
Oh, nice.
So
Okay.
anyway, so I forgot that Jay was in Agent 99, even though his Instagram name is Slacker Agent Jay. I totally forgot. Anyways, then they pull in Vinny from Doom Stompers. Doom Stompers is a new ska band, but I think Vinny's been around a little while. He plays bass. And then for a period of time, we were going to have like a different singer or two for every song, you know. And that's a lot of work. And honestly, I'm not a huge fan of that because when you go to those kind of concerts, like you see someone that you're a fan of, and it's cool, and there's like three people you don't really know, and then it's someone else that you know is very disjointed and really doesn't really have momentum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I forget how R probably mentioned this. Although maybe I can't remember. I thought of R mentioned this. Is I forgot that R recorded an entire album with Kepi Ghuli. It's called Kepi and Friends. I think it's just called Covers, and it's Kepi Ghuli's very good covers album. He covers David Bowie, he covers T-Rex, he covers a bunch of stuff. Oh yeah, Mazzy Star, I think. And
Oh,
so
wow.
R, I don't even know how R knows Kepi Ghuli because R lives in the East Coast and Kepi lives in Sacramento or somewhere, you know. And so I thought, well, and Kepi's always like, I'll play a show anywhere. All you have to do is buy me a plane ticket. And that seems like a little fishy. I'm like, really, you know? And so I say, I'm like, R, you think Kepi will be down for this? He's like, well, he loves the Clash, and he put out a Clash cover, and he's covered Straight to Hell by the Clash. So I message Kepi, who I'm a big fan of. He's weird, but I'm a big fan of. What do you think his reaction was, M?
Hell yeah, let's do this.
He was like, all I need is a plane ticket, and I actually paid him money on top of it too. But I mean, like.
Yeah.
He didn't say he wanted money on top of it, but I kind of assumed he did. And even if he did, that's pro, you know, because he's got to learn like 15 or 20 songs. You know what I mean? So like I say, not, I mean, to me, Kepi is a rock star. Record sales wise, not necessarily a rock star, but for the legends, for the people that have been doing it and make a living off of it, they're easy to deal with. If they want to deal with it, they'll be like, yes, here's the money I want or whatever. Or they'd be like, no, I can't commit to that at this time or whatever. You know, Kepi was like, let's do it. And so frankly, I was shocked at how easy this was to put together. You know, like shocked. I'm like, wow, you know. Of course, it's easy for me. I'm not the one that's got to learn the songs and practice them. So it's easy for me, you know. And then I'm like, but you know what though? Is I, like I said, I'm not huge on the Clash worship. So I need a counterpoint. So I've had Danbert, I've done three shows with Danbert. Of course, Danbert is a first wave punk rocker. Chumbawamba put out the first Clash diss track, Garage Land, off Bullshit Detector 2, I think. And of course, and they love the Clash, and so I'm like that is the perfect counterpunch, in that well, oh, Clash is the best. We love the Clash. Joey Strummer, Mick, you're the best. We, but then we'll have an actual punker from back in the day who's still a total punker that is as punk as it gets. I'm like, that's the counterpoint, and
Sure.
so I didn't want to ask him to do all Clash stuff because I thought that would be rude. So I said, why don't you do mostly solo stuff and a little bit of Clash stuff, and that'll be a nice spice,
Yeah.
And for the openers, I know that the Drugettes, they love the Clash, and the Drugettes are awesome and they're pretty tough. So I'm like, why don't you guys do like the hits from the Clash USA and Clash UK? And then the Draculas, I think they just asked to play punk music again, and I've seen them before. The reason I know them is John Lango, formerly of Crazy in the Brains, drummed for them for a little while, and that's when I saw them, and they were great. And I think I just asked them, do you want to do this gig? And you got to play Clash tunes. Oh, the funny thing about them is they're like, okay, but the I'm like, do you want to play this Clash tribute? They're like, great, we'll play our songs. And I'm like, no, it's a Clash
Oh.
tribute. They're like, yeah, we'll play our songs. I'm like, no, you have to play Clash songs. It is a Clash tribute. And I should point out with the Drugettes, at first, a couple of them wanted to learn Clash songs, but the other ones were like, well, what if we just did a couple of Clash songs because we don't want to learn a bunch of new stuff? And I'm like, it is a Clash tribute. So essentially, for a hot minute, I had a Clash tribute show with three out of the four bands not playing Clash, So I had to put,
Yeah.
unlike me, I had to put my foot down. I'm like, well, listen, if you want to play, you can play. If not, that's fine, but you got to do all Clash, And so it was pretty much squared away. I announced the show back in February, and much like pretty much all the recent shows where I've announced them like way ahead of time, is ticket sales popped off, then kind of like just trickled in for the next 4 or 5 months or whatever, like two tickets here, a ticket here, which has been the pattern for a while now, and I've yet to be able to discern when we get certain ticket sale patterns and when we don't. Anyways, and so for the show, I'm trying to think of lead up wise. Oh, I got to think about the sponsors. We had sponsors, so I paid to fly out Denver. I put Denver in a hotel. I fly to pay out Kepi. So this show had more moving parts than any show. I've never flown anybody out. I've never put anybody up in a hotel. Pro tip, don't ever agree to put a musician up in a hotel. Just give them money. I did not realize how insanely expensive it is at a hotel. Like, I thought, I'm used to booking
Ooh.
like Vegas and LA. Vegas is like, they almost pay you to stay there, So I'm like, yeah, it'll be
Yeah.
200, $300. And then hotels are very expensive in Philadelphia, M. Very expensive, I'm like, wow. I'm like, wow. So M, never agree to put a band up in a hotel. Say, oh, I'll give you $300 for a hotel and let them worry about it. You know what I mean? Oof. So anyways, so and I'll point out that like punk rock bowling and all these giant festivals, I don't know. I mean, I would say I don't know how they do it, but the way they do it, it's their full-time job and they've got a staff and they just block out a hotel. But M,
Yeah.
like flying someone out, making sure the hotel info information is locked in, like it's nerve-wracking because hotels aren't always 100% on point. So like you want to make
Right.
sure when artist gets there, they say, oh yes, Mr. Hunter, come on in. Like it's a lot of things to worry about, like how close is the hotel to the airport, how close is the hotel to the venue, all that stuff you got to worry about, and like the plane ticket, and it's all real complicated. So I mean, it is amazing that festivals do this, and at times I have vaguely considered doing a festival at a small scale. Maybe I will at some point, but and I mean, it is. I don't know how people do it. It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of
Oh,
work.
so much.
So, anyways, I'm trying to think of anything happened lead up wise. Oh, okay, so we got to thank the sponsors. Literally, thanks to our sponsors, why we were able to make this show happen. Because flying people out, putting them up in hotels is not cheap. So let's thank Revilla Grooves Records. Let's thank Repo Records. Let's thank Crash Bang Boom. Let's thank Sit & Spin Records. Let's thank Rainbow Records down in Delaware. Let's thank High Voltage Records. Let's thank Vinyl Revival. I'm doing this by memory. I probably really should. I'm trying to. Oh, we got to thank Angry Young and Poor Records. We got to thank Rock and Roll Knife Fight with Richie Rye, fantastic store. We have to thank Heavy Metal Hair Salon. And I think that's everybody. I'm going to look it up real quick. Literally, thanks to them, we were able to. Without them, this gig could not have happened because I would have been in the hole a lot of money, Em.
Ooh,
I
yeah.
will say, Em, I'm very proud of myself with coming up with this sponsor idea. Like other festivals or whatever. Here we go. So we got Revealing of Grooves, Angry Young and Poor, Rock and Roll Knife Fight, Siren Records in Doylestown, Heavy Metal Hair Salon, Sit and Spin Rainbow, Princeton Record Exchange, The Great Princeton Record Exchange, Crash Bang Boom, Repo Records, Vinyl Revival, and High Voltage Records. Thanks to all of you. I am proud of, like Monster Energy Drink or like whoever or like the Spotify will sponsor music festivals. But I'm like, no, yet again, I'm
No.
stealing from hip hop. And I will go to local businesses like Don's Barbershop or Vinny's Ribs or whatever, and I will have them sponsor my gig and put them on the flyers. So I the sponsorship idea was directly, quote, borrowed from how hip hop operates. And I'm very proud of that, Em. It's a good way to make things happen. And actually, Em,
Yeah.
here's the other dilemma.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure all or certainly most of all the sponsors were pretty happy. And I said to
Yes.
myself, we do a summer tour every year. And so I'm going to do one sponsored show a year. I don't want to hit these people up every time I do a gig because then, I
Right.
don't want them to be like, oh, every time this guy plays a show, I have to pay him money. But it makes sense to me. The summer soiree, we're flying people out. This is the time to ask for sponsorships, right? So
Yeah.
I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But after the show is over, a couple of the sponsors were like, yeah, anytime you want to sponsor, anytime you're doing something, let us know. And there might be a show in the fall or winter. We'll see, a different thing. And
Ooh.
so I guess I mean, certain sponsors have specifically asked for me to talk to them when I'm setting up a show, right? So
Sure.
I have to
Yes.
hit them up, right?
Of course.
But then how about the other ones that didn't say anything? Like I don't want to hit them up every time I'm doing a show, but I don't want them to feel left out. Like that's kind of an awkward position, you know what I mean?
I think if they've asked you, like, hey, let us know, then definitely ask them. But if they didn't, then just like hold off
Yeah, I think
unless
you're
you
right.
feel like it would make sense for them to be there.
I think you're right. I think if people don't ask, I'll just hit them up for summer. I mean, some of these sponsors have been doing it for like 6 years now, which is pretty cool. But like I'll only hit up the ones that don't ask me on for summer soiree, but the ones that say they want to be involved, then I'll ask them, because it makes a big difference. It really does at this level. So, anyways, I'm trying to think of anything else weird happens. I put a lot of work into this show, so I'll talk about that briefly.
Yeah.
This show had more moving parts than any show we've ever done ever before. Oh, and this is kind of cool too. Rachel, the Drugettes, went to England, and she went to Paul Simonon's bar and had a drunk Paul Simonon tell people that they should come to the show, which was pretty cool. It's on our Instagram. You can find it.
I
Emmy, have you seen that?
have. It was really cool.
It's like Paul's
Yeah.
clearly like not wasted but tipsy, and he's like, "This is Paul Simonon, and I'm telling you to go to the punk soiree. You'll love it." Psh, and then he does the give him the hand. It's awesome. Paul Simonon's the man. So that was kind of fun. And so for the show, for the summer soirees, the idea it's an arty, it's an arty. It really it's interactive art, The summer soirees is not drunk punks be drunk. It's not skulls and chains and or uber punks. It is a classy punk as high art event.
Yes.
So I made backdrops. Every band had a unique backdrop. The Dracula's backdrop was the cover of Sandinista with the Clash removed, and it said Dracula's instead of the Clash. The backdrop for the Drugettes was the first Clash record with the members removed from the cover, and it said Drugettes instead of the Clash. Danbert's backdrop was Good Enough Rope with it had the horse and the dead body, but I removed the guy on the horse and removed the words of Clash with Danbert No Bacon. And for
Right.
Ghetto Defendant, which was I didn't say the name of the band, I should have. Ghetto Defendant was Aura, Jay, Vinny, and Kepi. London Calling with Paul Simonon removed, so it was like an empty stage, and the words Ghetto Defendant instead of the Clash. And the idea being is they're in the album cover performing. You see what I'm saying? Which I thought was kind of a neat effect,
Yeah.
We made so I used to do programs because when we first started doing summer soiree, I was kind of ripping off World Inferno as in like Great Gatsby. But due to printing, like due to printing costs, programs are it used to be free for me to make programs. I would make them at my work. But then after
Oh,
that, and
sure.
it would cost me like 40 cents to make a program. After COVID, and what do you think it would cost me to make the same kind of program I used to make?
$2.
$3 to $4 each. So I it used
Ooh.
to be 30 cents. I can't do that. So I came up with what I thought was a pretty clever idea. Is I so the liner notes for London Calling and the newspaper for Sandinista had something called the Armageddon Times, a pun on the Clash, the song Armageddon
Oh.
Time, originally by Willie Williamson, covered by the
Yeah.
Clash. So instead of having, and I realized at Kinko's or Staples rather, I can print up a giant piece of paper for 32 cents and 32 cents, 64 cents, like a newspaper sheet, but even bigger. So instead of doing a program, I made Armageddon Times issue 4, and I wrote all these newspaper articles about the bands and some other stuff and put the sponsors' logos in the newspaper, like actual newspaper ads. So when people came in, they got like the newspaper as the Armageddon Times, which I thought was kind of cool. Also, for the Drew Gets, I made a special wraparound cover for their album, and I put Rachel on the cover of London Calling instead of Paul Simon. And I also made a mixtape for Ghetto Defendant and Dambert that had two songs from each member, two songs from Kepi, two songs from Ara, two songs from Vinny, two songs from Jay, and two songs from Dambert. And what was cool is some of them were each on the other's tracks. Like there's one song that's got Ara and Kepi. There's another song that's got Ara and Jay. And there's a couple other crossovers. So it was kind of a cool little mixtape that we made. You could only get at the show. So anyways, the show sold out the night before, pretty much, or the day before, which was cool. And it's always great going into a show, having being so, even when you're like 10 from selling out, it's, you think it wouldn't really matter, but it's not as great as going into a show where you know you're sold out, you know everything's paid for, you're not going to lose too much money. And so there's really nothing to worry about but having fun. Plus, it's always a great feeling is as soon as the bands get there, because it's sold out, you know exactly how much they're going to get paid. So you can hit them with the money so they walk in the door instead of having to pay them at the end, you know.
Yeah.
And so the intro, so what I will say about the show is for the past couple of shows I've thrown, I've said they were uneventful, and I was kind of happy about that.
Yes.
This is, and I don't know, well, I have an idea of what it was. This show was not uneventful. We'll get to some of that in a second. So anyways, I don't want to jump this out too much, but between each band I had a special selection of music. Before the show I had, I just did contemporaries of the Clash, like 999, Sex Pistols, The Specials, Subway Sect, all those English bands that were contemporaries of the Clash.
Yes.
And then we started the show with that Paul Simon video game because we had to reuse it. And then on stage, oh, so before the gig, I mean, weeks and months before the gig, I was trying to get a telephone with a cord, right? And guess how much the
Yes.
thrift charge for like an old telephone with a cord, a curly cord.
An old telephone with cord, I'm going to say, was $25.
30, right, $30. I'm like, well, I'm not spending that on like a
Ooh.
3 second joke. I thought I could get that for like a dollar, but for whatever reason those are on. So I made a giant, throwing back to my party in Jabba's Palace where I made a giant crappy
Oh,
looking Jabba. I made a giant crappy looking phone that was kind of funny. And so to kick off the gig, Dracula's already on stage with Kay on the vocals. The phone starts ringing and people are like confused. And I go up on stage and people are like, one of the, and actually this was an ad-lib by one of the Draculas, which was smart. They're like, John, you should answer the phone. And I'm like, should I answer the phone? And the crowd's like, yeah, answer the phone. So I pick up the phone and on the other side, it's me in a Cockney accent saying, right now, this is London calling. What's going on over there in the States tonight? And then I yell, what's going on over the States? It's Black Market Clash. And I threw the phone into the crowd. And then, you know, explosions erupt. And then I hype the crowd like I always do. I say, Philadelphia makes a noise. I can't hear you, Philadelphia makes noise. And then I yell, when I say the, you say clash. When I say the, you say clash. The clash, the clash. So I say, when I say rock the, you say Casbah. When I say rock the, you say Casbah. Rock the cat. And so, you know, I'm getting the crowd hyped.
Yeah.
And then I yell out the name of the band. And then I jump into the audience. And then explosions go off. And the Dracula start their set. Oh, I already forgot. So here's where the weird night started, Em. So before all, like 3 minutes before this is about to happen, and I'll point out, Em, I've had this intro going through in my brain since February. You know, the summer story is kind of my big night. It's kind of like my big thing that I put together. You know, in a degree, it's almost like a
Yeah.
visual artist opening night. Like this is my big night. You know, I've got on the blue Pung News tuxedo. I've got the top hat on. You know, I've got the bow tie, the cummerbund. You know. And this guy comes up to me and he goes, John, I'm not, I don't know him. I might have seen him once or twice. He goes, John, I lost my wallet. Can you do an announcement? And I'm thinking, like, he's like, I set it down on this table and I lost my wallet. And tell me if I'm
Oh
being a dick
no.
here. Tell me if I'm being a dick. I'm like really
Okay.
annoyed. I'm really
Sure.
annoyed because A, it's like you lost your wallet in an irresponsible way, you know? And now you're making it my problem 120 seconds before I'm going to go on stage to kick off my big night of the year. You know what I mean? And so I'm really annoyed. Was I being a dick here? Because A, on one hand, M, he did lose his wallet, and you know, shit happens to people all the time, myself included. And sometimes, you know, an unfortunate thing happens, you know. But then from my perspective, I'm like, this is, don't make me your mommy. Don't lose your effing wallet, you know. So was I being a dick, Em?
I think with stuff like that, it's always helpful to be like, oh, I last saw it over here or whatever. But I think y not necessarily you dealing with it, like getting somebody, because you're getting ready to do your stuff, like getting like, oh, here's like someone who works here. They're gonna help you like find your wallet. They know it. They know the area better than I do, kind of thing. Like, I think that would be fine. Like, you didn't tell him to fuck off or anything, did you? I
No,
think
actually,
that'd be kind of rude.
what I said to him is like after the band, after the first band plays, I'll do an announcement, you know.
Oh yeah, I
But
think you're fine.
I didn't want to do it like 1 minute before my big intro because that like kills the momentum. You know what I mean? Like that like breaks the shroud. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. Yeah, I think you
Like
did the right thing.
there's energy in the room. People are excited. You know, they know it's about to start. The lights are down. It's like I don't want to kill. Like I don't want to fumble the kickoff. You know, so I go up
Totally.
there, so I do my announcement. I jump to the stage. Dracula's play. Let me see if I can pull up their set list real quick. I do have it somewhere. I should have had this ready. The theme for the Dracula's was songs of, well, there's they say we want to do song Clash of Songs of Love, and I'm like, that's stupid. You should do Clash of Songs of Hate and War and Love. Get it? You know, because they've got hate and war, you
Oh,
know. And
yeah.
so they were like, oh, okay, you know. I'm like, you understand the idea of a theme, but I'm being kind of a dick. But let's see if I can pull this up real quick. Damn it. Sorry, listeners. I should have had this ready.
This is the true punk news podcast
There we go. I think I have
experience.
it.
Yes.
No. I,
You don't?
here it is. Wait.
Okay.
Yes, here it is. Okay.
Hell yeah.
I think. Here, oh, so here's your set list. Actually, his set list is pretty cool. The interesting opener, I Fought the Law. And why is that an interesting opener?
Because
Great
it's a
song.
cover song.
Yeah, but you know, that's cool, man. I mean, I was down, you know. I Fought the Law, Tommy Gunn, Spanish Bombs, Train in Vain, and Should I Stay or Should I Go? And interestingly,
Ooh, solid.
is Dracula's were kind of like the last band to pick their songs. None of the other bands picked Train in Vain or Should I Stay or Should I Go?
I'm kind of surprised.
So, anyways, like honestly, they sounded awesome.
Nice.
They had Kay of the Tomb Stompers singing for this set, and it was raw. Actually, it was actually very smooth. And the people were like way into it, and they sounded great, and they were awesome. And I would definitely have the Draculas and do the Tomb Stompers play a show, in the future. So they were great. They really were great. And the theme did translate. It was, let's see, are these all love songs? They almost are. Well, I guess Tommy Gunn is a love song if you love terrorism. But all the other songs are love songs. But anyway, I was thrilled to hear Train in Vain because I love Train in Vain. And so they were awesome. And then so after they're done, I go on stage and make an announcement. But I didn't know this, Em, is between the bands, they cut the microphone, which kind of makes sense. So I'm speaking, but nobody can hear me. So I
Oh
go back down
no.
and the guy goes, John, can you make an announcement? I said to him, A after the second band plays, I'll run up on stage when it's still on and make the announcement. I can't because the mic's not on, you know. Now, in
Yeah.
reality, Em, I could have probably went back to the sound guy and said, can you turn the mics on and blah, but I didn't feel like doing it, Em. I just didn't feel like doing it, you know what I mean? You know,
Sure.
so maybe I was a little bit of a dick, you know. And so between the first and second band, I'm trying to think what the theme, the music theme was. Damn. I know the other two themes. Let's see, after. What was the theme, Sam? I mean, Em, what was my theme for that between set?
I'm not quite sure.
It
Did you post it on
was
Instagram?
no.
Oh.
It was, damn, what was, damn it, what was that theme? Oh, I remember. It was bands that influenced the Clash. So the Kinks, Mott the Hoople, and groups like that. And really, there really isn't that many. So it was so that. So I don't know if most people got that. I did want to do what was it? I didn't. Well, I didn't want to do like Clash spin-off bands, but I really didn't have, like A would have been too disjointed, and I also wanted to have bands that opened for the Clash. So like Bo Diddley and like. Grandmaster Flash, but it was too uneven of a between band music. So second band
Oh,
goes on
sure.
is the
Okay.
Drew Gets. The Drew Gets did almost every song from the Clash's first album, the UK version, and it was awesome. They were actually a lot tougher sound than that. Drew Gets are a pretty tough band, but it was really like bam, 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 like kind of raw, ragged, loud, and banging, and even tougher than the Clash did it. And it was real cool. It was great. The people were way into it. While they're playing, this guy comes up to me, M, and he says,
Yes.
"I think I'm gonna go home." I'm like, "All right." He's like, "I'll leave my phone number. If you find my wallet, you can let me know." So I'm like, "All right."
Oh,
So I hand
okay.
him a piece of paper and a pen, and he can't figure out how to use the pen. And he's like, "Well, just give me." He's like, "Give me your no, I'll, give me your cell phone number, and I'll text you." And then you can text. No, I'll give you my cell phone number and you can text me. And I'm thinking, I don't want to give this guy my cell phone number. So I get a marker. I'm like, here, write down your cell phone number here, you know? So he
Okay.
writes it down and he leaves. And I'm like, if I lost my wallet, I mean, that's a bummer, but I don't think I'd leave early without my wallet, you know? Anyway, so that was like the
Yeah.
first thing of the weird night, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm being a little grumpy. And maybe I was a little hard on the guy. I might have been a little hard on the guy. I mean,
I
I
think
genuinely
at
was
that
on an
point, yeah.
announcement, and I did look for his wallet, but I was annoyed that he was making me his problem when I felt he caused his own problem. It'd be different if he was like pickpocketed or something. That'd be different, you know. But
Of
he lost his
course.
wallet. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. Anyway, so the Drew Gets were friggin' awesome, and they really were. After the Drew Gets, the between music was Mikey Dread, who of course recorded with the Clash a lot. And so we did like Mikey Dread music. And then here's where things start to get really odd. I mean, you tell me what you would have done here.
Okay, let's hear it.
So before the show, outside there's these two young girls or young women. I don't know if they were 17 or 18 or 19. Young women, all right?
Yeah.
And I could tell just by the way they were standing, they hadn't been to this kind of a gig before, you know. I could just tell,
Sure.
you know.
Yeah, of course.
And they had. I forgot that there were a limited number of physical tickets. Some of the record stores gave out physical tickets, and I forgot that there was physical tickets. And so Carabo, my door guy, was going around. He's like, "John, what are these?" I'm like, "Oh, I forgot. Those are physical tickets. I totally forgot about those." And I'm like, "Oh, where'd you get those from?" And I thought they would say like Siren Records or something. They're like Bobby Jones. I'm like, "Who?" Yeah, I'm like, "What?" You know, or like Frank, you know, McElhenney. I'm like, "What?" And I figured out that Frank McElhenney, whoever, must have won tickets and just gave them to these young ladies. Cool, that's fine. You know, whatever, that's cool.
Oh, I see.
You
Okay.
know,
Yeah.
so, and I could tell like this kind of concert was new to them, which is fine. You know, that's cool.
Totally fine.
So during the Drew Gets, one of them comes up to me and she's like, "Do you see that guy over there in the America hat?" And some guy's wearing like let me change up detail. "Do you see the guy over there in a blue hat?" And I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, yeah, I do. I wish I could remember what she said first. She said that he said something to them. I remember it wasn't sexual in nature, but it was like an odd question. And then she said,
Oh.
"And also he offered us crystal meth." And I'm like,
Oh,
"What?"
Jesus.
I'm like, "What?" You know, I'm like,
Oh,
"Huh?"
no.
You know? And
Yeah.
I'm like, "That's weird." You know, and I'm thinking,
Oh,
what I'm like,
shit.
what do I do here? Because like if that's true, then I gotta throw the guy out, you know. But if I ask him, he's
Yeah.
gonna say no. But if they're doing something weird or if they're confused, then that's gonna be a problem. And no matter what I say to him, he's gonna say no. So what am I gonna do? Search his pockets? You know what I mean? So I'm like,
Yeah.
so they might say I'm making a not safe space, you know, or maybe this guy is not like, but what's weird and what's weird about and what's weird about offering someone crystal meth?
Many things, most notably that you have crystal meth and you're
Well, see,
carrying it around.
well, that's it exactly. And that, like, if they had said cocaine, I would, or coke rather, I would have been like, oh. But like crystal meth is not a social drug. Crystal meth is really the kind of
No.
drug where you go around and say, hey, do you want some meth? Now, creeps do go around with cocaine and say to young women or young men or whoever, hey, you want some coke, you know?
Yeah.
But crystal meth is like a drug where like you're running pretty thin and you need to get high in your, you know, $45 motel room. You know what I mean? Like crystal
You're having a
meth is
bad
not
time.
like, that's not like you go out with, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna bring some crystal meth with me and maybe I'll find someone that wants to smoke it with me. That, you know, so I'm like, what is going on here? So, and then I've got what, 5 seconds, 10 seconds to make a decision. You know what I mean? Because if
Of
I don't do
course.
anything, then I'm making a not safe space. But if this is some weird thing, or maybe they just don't understand, like, you know. So I said to them, well, do you want to go upstairs to the balcony? The balcony is off limits, but you can actually see the show.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
What do you think of that solution, Evan?
I think that's a good solution because you're getting them into a safe space where they're not going to be accosted by like this guy or have like creepy things said to them or like any sort of proposition. So, I think that's a good way to go about it. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that I was panicking, but I was feeling under the gun. And I'm like, what do I do? Like, this is weird. I've never had anything like that happen ever. And the worst thing not going with that has happened at a Pung Yu show was at the low budget show where two separate people got in fist fights, you
Oh
know.
yeah, right.
But I'm like, what? Like, I would say that's the kind of thing I expected the dwarves, but I don't because the dwarves audiences are great. I'm like, what? Like at the Slacker show, crystal meth. You know, I'm like, what? Kepi Ghouli has released kids albums, you know? And so they said,
Yeah.
well, we're gonna go outside for a minute. So they went outside. I think they never came back in. And so
Oh no.
I'm
Okay.
like, what? So I'm like watching this dude. I'm like, and then I see like his wife comes up to him and they appear to be like a normal couple. You know what I mean? And I'm like, would some dude be
Okay.
walking around with crystal meth with his wife? You know?
You never know.
It's
That's a
possible. It's
good cover.
possible. You know what I mean? It's po so I so later on I see someone that I know talking to this dude. I've never seen this dude ever. And
Sure.
I and it's, let's say my friend is Mike, you know. I say, Mike, what's the deal with that guy over there? He's like, oh, and he says his name. And I'm like, and the music starts playing, and so I didn't get to follow back up with Mike, but I gotta ask Mike, like, what's that dude's deal? You know, like, is this like some weird scam? Do they misunderstood? Or is there some dude with his wife walking around the hand, like offering crystal meth? What do you do in that
Right.
situation? What do you do in that situation, Em? That's probably the weirdest situation I've ever had at a show of that regards.
Yeah, I think it's the make sure the people who felt unsafe are in a safe space and like feel safe in that sense, first and foremost, and then dealing with somebody who may or may not have crystal meth. It's, I think, ooh.
See, like, if I ask him, he's going to say
Yeah.
no. He's not going to be like, yeah, I've got crystal meth. You know what I mean? So either my options are just to throw him
Yeah.
out, and that can inflame the situation, you know, or and do I throw out his wife too? You know, but then what if that's not true at all? You know?
Could they have been pointing at somebody else?
No, because he had a very specific hat on.
Okay.
And so it was
Okay.
definitely they were
It
definitely
was
pointing at him.
definitely this guy.
Definitely that guy.
Okay. Excuse me, with drugs.
So I mean I don't know if there is a solution. I don't have one. My solution was, well, you want to go up into the balcony, you know, but like part of it is that they'd never been to this kind of a show before. So like maybe
But like saying someone asked you for crystal meth or asked someone offered you crystal meth is like super specific.
yeah, it's hard to misunderstand that, you know? Like, what could he have said if he didn't say
Yeah.
that, you know? I don't know, man. That is one of the weird things. Like, I don't know. That was weird. It was weird, you know. So maybe I need to think up some kind of policy in case it happens again. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, Peng Yu shows are definitely no drugs. If you have drugs, you are thrown out of a Peng Yu show. But I'm not the cops.
Totally.
I can't go around like checking people's pockets. I can't search people. You know what I mean?
You could ask, well, like that's what I'm trying to think is like, how can you ask it in a way that's not like super invasive or
Here's
whatever?
how
Like
I
if you
am.
just go up and
Hey
you're like, hey, do you have
man.
crystal meth?
No, I'll go up to you. Hey man, I need some crystal meth bad. Do you have any? That's how you do it, I guess, right?
Or you're like,
Aha!
hey, yeah.
Aha, I got you know.
Hey, do you have weed? No, I just have crystal
Unless
meth. There you go.
he's an undercover cop, and then I just got implicated myself. Who knows? Anyway, that was weird. So anyway, it gets a little bit weirder later on him. So
Oh,
anyways,
okay. Yes.
next up was Dan Burt. Dan Burt did about, I would say, two-thirds solo stuff, one-third Clash stuff. And you know, Danbert was very, very important because you know the other three bands, rightfully so, were like, "Hooray, the Clash! We, the Clash! Hooray!" Danbert's very political. He's in Chumbawamba. He was in Chumbawamba, and so he did like When Push Comes to Shove, which is about kind of now's the time to step up and take America back, and I mean that in a positive way, not in the Trump way, in a positive way.
Right.
Take America back from oligarchs and despots and fascists and billionaires. He did a new song which was kind of cool that like merges this new song with the refrain of Tub Thumping, which was kind of cool.
Oh,
Like I
cool.
get knocked down, but now I get up again, referring to, you know, he did I'm trying to think what else he did. Oh, he did my favorite Danbert solo track, Building a Wall, which is about the first time Trump built the wall. My favorite Danbert solo track, an amazing song. He did some Clash stuff, and what was kind of cool is because he's just acoustic, he told some stories. One of the neat ones that I thought he told was, and I knew about this, but I know about the second half, is between his first band, Chimp Eats Banana, and Chumbawamba, he and a couple of the other early Chumbawamba guys went busking in France, I think.
Oh.
And when they were busking in France, they used to play Clash's Career Opportunities. So he played Clash's Career Opportunities, which was kind of neat, you know.
Yeah.
He also did Safe European Home, talking about kind of borders and all that kind of stuff, and the crowd sang along for that, which is real cool. And a couple of times, because you know, it's a little bit difficult for Danbert in the context that it's Danbert sandwiched between two electric bands, which in a way is very powerful because you're coming at a different angle, but also it's quieter. So during a bunch of his songs, people like did the clapping, you know, for a beat, which was real cool. So Danbert was totally awesome and absolutely fantastic. After Danbert
Nice.
played, well, here's another weird thing. So during Danbert playing, somebody from the audience must have asked him, "Can I play a song with you?" And he said, "Sure." And it was actually, I think it was Safe You Were, no, it was Wrong Amboyo. He did a version of Wrong Amboyo, which was real cool,
Oh,
of Funny
nice.
Calling. And the
Yeah.
president got up on stage with an electric guitar and was like doing a solo to Wrong Amboyo, but it was like this blues metal solo, like over top of the song. And I'm like, what is going on here? Like, it was weird. It was weird, Em. It was weird.
It sounds cool.
It was, you know, Dan, let me put it this way. Danbert is a pro and he can get over any hurdle there is, you know. And so then after that, the music, then I played bands that are mentioned, White Man and Hammersmith Palais before Ghetto Defendant. Leroy Smart, Dillinger, let's see, Delroy Wilson, and who's the other one in that song? Leroy Smart, The Cool Operator, Delroy Wilson, Dillinger, and who's the other one? Damn it. Midnight to Six Man from the first one from Jamaica, Dillinger and Leroy Smart, Delroy Wilson, The Cool Operator, Ken Booth. Ken Booth was the other one that we also played.
Ooh, okay.
But of course, and actually, like people have shirts with like that gig on their shirt and stuff. And what's ironic about wearing that shirt, you know, or playing that before Ghetto Defendant takes the stage?
It was a riot.
No. So White Man at Hammersmith Palais is all about how Joe Strummer and the Clash went to this reggae gig that they thought was going to be this transcendent, like roots and culture kind of thing. And it wound up being like kind of like a soul review, like very Disney, like it was very
Oh,
manufactured. So the song is all about how they were very disappointed with the gig and thought it was cheesy. You know, it was four tops all night with the exit at stage right. So it's funny to like play that music, which the band went to the gig and was disappointed by, you know. Anyways, so anyway, while they're setting up, I mean, here's the fourth and kind of final weird thing is this guy gets up on stage, and I thought it was Agent J of the Slackers, but otherwise it wasn't. And he starts like doing an imitation, not of me, but of my intro, you know, like who's ready for the greatest band ever? And I'm like, who's this guy? And I'm walking around asking people, I'm like, who's this guy? You know, and he's going on and on. And I thought he was like maybe friends with the Slackers and like they asked him to do like this weird intro, or he asked them, you know. And so I see Ara's girlfriend, a nice lady named Nicole. I say, you know who that is? She's like, I have no idea. And then and he's gone like he's like he's trying to get crowd interaction like I do. And I'm sounding kind of cocky, but I don't care. I have a very specific vision of what I want, you know, at the show. And I'm getting like pretty pissed off, but he's like doing this imitation of me or my routine, but it's like bad and doesn't make any sense, you know. And I'm getting like pretty pissed off, and I'm a little mad at the Slackers or R. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of my thing, man. Like I'm not pleased that you let someone else do my thing, you know. And then I'm also thinking, you know what, John, you're way too high strung. You're way too, I mean, it's just an introduction. Like, is that really that special? Is it really that magical? You know? And so on one hand, and I've got a very, the reason summer soirees to me are so magical is everything fits together. The backdrops, the bands, the flyers, the intros, everything fits together. You know what I mean? And it's not drunk punks being idiots. It's high art, you know?
Of
And so
course.
on one hand, I'm like pissed off. I'm like, who's this guy stealing my thing? On the other hand, I'm like, dude, like, there's babies dying of AIDS and malaria in Africa. Are you really getting upset over this? You know? So, Em, where should I stand on that?
Like I wouldn't say go nuclear, but like I understand you being mad because that's not cool.
So anyway, I'm like, who's this guy? I'm asking, oh, you know, almost like an Italian style. I'm like, who's this guy? You know, and people are like, I have no idea. I'm like pissed off. And then he
Of
like
course.
the crowd is like kind of confused by him. And then I guess he realizes he doesn't have the crowd. And he did something that really kind of annoyed me. He goes, okay, one last thing. Crunchy bacon or soft and chewy bacon? Crunchy bacon or soft and chewy bacon, which annoyed me on two counts. First, it
Okay.
annoyed me on that, like, we're not doing dumb knucklehead shit. We're doing, you know, my intro is borrowed or stolen from hip hop intros. Like the intro that I do is really a hip hop intro, you know, like
Yeah.
Funkmaster Flex. But it's a very it, like it, there's a specific angle that I'm taking. I'm not just doing dumb jokes, you know. Also,
Of
the bacon
course.
conversation, you know, that's so played out. So I'm annoyed that like the idea is it's classy and it's clever. This is just dumb meme shit, you know. Also, you know, Dan Burt's a vegan. He's way into animal rights and stuff, you know. And I'm like, don't insult my dudes by doing this bullshit, you know. You know what I mean? What I'm saying is Dan Burt made the event very political, you know. And I'm so glad that he did. You know, he made
First.
everybody remember the Clash and punk is fun, but it's not just fun, you know. And then I've got this guy up here like asking if people like bacon, you know. I'm like, you know, like after this magical moment, you know.
Of course.
And then like the crowd like didn't even really react and he just got off the stage. And then in a couple minutes later, I realized, Em, do you know who that guy was?
Who?
Just some guy. Just some guy jumped up on the stage and still thought he could do like an
Oh,
announcement. And in a way, I thought that was
what an
actually kind of funny.
asshole.
But to me, that was funnier and a little bit of a relief because I felt a little disrespected and annoyed that if it was the Slackers or one of those guys, like
Oh,
you start kind of stepping on my feet, you know. But if you're just
of
some drunk
course.
asshole, you know, that's just some drunk asshole. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, and I mean, I'm sure you know, even at a punk gig, like, you know, people crowd dive, stage dive, or whatever, they jump around, and
For
that's all
sure.
cool and fun. But it's off limits to get behind the equipment and touch the equipment. You know what I mean?
Oh,
Like, that's
God,
not
yeah.
cool, you know. And I'm
Not cool.
like, who is this guy? You know, it was just some drunk guy, and it was just some drunk guy that felt comfortable enough to get up on stage and try to be me. And on one hand, I guess I should be complimented, right? Like, because he's trying to be me. And so I mean, I wasn't that. I mean, I was annoyed, but after I realized he was just some drunk guy, I wasn't that annoyed. Just a weird thing. But it was also interesting about how, like, it didn't end in a bang or anything. It was just some drunk guy got up on stage and people kind of ignored him, and then he got off stage, you know.
Yeah.
Weird. So
Very
anyways,
weird.
the final set of the evening, M.
Yes.
Am I being boring? Is this a boring conversation?
No, I want to hear how the show went because I wasn't able to go, so this is fun.
So
I'm enjoying it.
actually, let's take a brief pause before. So we there was a lot of there's a lot of people taking video, which I actually like a lot because I like seeing the video after the show is over. There was a couple
Yeah.
photographers and there was one videographer, and you and I think have clashed on this before.
Oh, yes.
I
Photographer debate.
like, why should photographers get into my gig for free to take photographers that they own? That annoys me. It really does. Like, it'd be one thing if they were giving me the pictures or the band, but they keep them for themselves. But on the other hand, then we have kind of cool shots from the actual gig. You know, so I don't know how I feel about that, you know. But there are a lot of cool shots and there's a lot of cool video from the gig. And
Yeah.
somebody filmed the whole thing. Which on one hand, Em, I'm like,
Oh,
you didn't have permission to film the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like you don't get that. If you want to film it, turn it over to me or turn it over to the band. You don't get that. But on the other hand, Em, it's cool that I have this thing on video that I didn't have to pay for, that we can ha serve as a record of the event. So I don't know how I feel about that either, you know?
I think it's the what is it? Like once it's out there, anyone can interact with it how they want to, and a lot of people will film. I love watching like stuff like that because, you know, it's like, oh, I wasn't able to go to like this show, and then, oh my God, someone got it. I can watch the whole thing. Like, this is exciting.
So, but shouldn't they turn that over to me or the band and not keep it for themselves then, if that's the goal?
I think like if they tag you on social media or they do something like that, I think it would be fine. But I don't think they have to turn it over to you unless you have a deal.
See, I disagree. Well, yeah, I mean, but the deal is they don't get to film at all because you don't get the right to film a show if you walk into a gig. So the deal should be for them coming to me and asking if they can film. And I would say yes, really, but I feel that's
You
rude.
could,
Like, I mean,
when you
like,
go to a
oh, go ahead. What's that?
When you go to a show, do you take photos and videos?
I take photos and I would take video for maybe my personal use, but I'm talking about people that film the entire gig or even an entire song. Actually, I guess it doesn't really bother me an entire song, but film the entire gig and put that up online without asking for permission. Now, the fact of the matter is, a lot of bands actually like that because it helps get them out there more. But still, as a copyright attorney, I'm very insulted by that. You didn't pay for that. Why do you get to control our hard work? You know?
Would you do something like what Jack White does, where it's like put your phone in a box and you get it back after the show? Would you do something like that
You mean, would
to
I do that
prevent it?
if I had unlimited money and ability? Yes. Well, actually, maybe not. Because I don't mind. I mean, at the core of it, for the most part, is people having fun. And in 2026, that is the way people enjoy things, is by taking pictures and video. You know, people do enjoy that. So I don't mind that. I don't mind that. But I do mind, and I don't even know if I really mind it, but I kind of mind when people film the entire thing or take a bunch of pictures. Let me draw the distinction here. If someone's just going to the gig and they take a picture or even a song video and put it up on their Instagram, I don't mind that at all. And I think most bands don't, you know. Some do, and
Yeah.
I don't blame them if they do. Danzig does, and I don't blame them. I get a little annoyed when it's a professional or semi-professional coming to take stuff for their portfolio and stuff that they claim to own. Now, they don't really own it because they didn't have permission to take video at a private place or film, you know. But for whatever reason, like a lot of door people, if someone says, "Oh, I'm a photographer," they'll just let them in. But I feel though it's rude to take and film the entire thing. And you put it up on your thing as a pro or semi-pro or whatever, you know.
Sure.
And sometimes I'll ask Ara how he feels about that. He'll probably be excited about it because it means the entire thing was recorded and you can watch it. But I'm just a little annoyed that they have the gall to do so. If they asked, I would probably say yes, you know. But why should they have the right to come in and take what doesn't belong to them and keep it without asking? Because they don't own those pictures. Technically, I own those pictures, but I would really give them to the band, you see, or video.
But doesn't the band own it regardless?
No, because I'm, well, that's a great question, but the answer is not really, because I've rented out the facility. So for the evening, the facility is my private venue. So the only way you're allowed to take video of other people's work is with my permission, and arguably the band's permission as well, you see. But that's between me and the band, not the person taking the video. And I realize
Interesting.
I'm coming across as kind of a miser, and most people probably disagree with me, but I value art. I don't think art is worthless, and I don't think you should be able to just to film whatever you want, whenever you want, and keep ownership of it. That would be one thing. Or if you really want to take photos of it or whatever, then take photos and then send a copy to the band and see if they can use that. But they don't even do that. They just keep it for themselves, which really is
So,
copyright infringement.
if they came to you afterwards and they were like, "Hey, I got this really cool footage of the show. Would you like it? That'll be like $25."
They're charging me?
Yeah.
I'm suing them for copyright infringement right away. I'm filing a lawsuit the next morning.
Okay.
Why should they charge me? They're only
Well,
there because I let them in.
they're like, "Hey, I did all of this work to film it."
Yeah, they should be paying me. If they want ownership of the video, they should pay me for the right to film.
How much would you charge for the right to film?
Well, in reality, I would never, I mean, at this level, I would never grant that. Or I actually, well, I would go talk to the band. I mean, excellent question. Let's say it's someone that, so really, I would not make any sort of a deal unless I saw the video and saw it was really quality. Let's say it's very quality. I would
Sure.
go to the band and I'd say, like, this person is a really good filmmaker or, videographer. So I would go back to them and I say, like, let's say it's the Dwarves. The Dwarves are pretty easygoing about this. That's why I'm using them as an example. But I don't think they really care.
Sure.
I would go to the Dwarves. I say, listen, this guy or this gal is a real good filmmaker. Do you want to give them permission? And here's the deal I'll cut with them. They retain ownership of the video, but we have an unlimited license to use it however we want. And we can sell it if we want. That's what I would do. So I wouldn't charge them, but
Oh, interesting.
we get a license to use it for however we want, you see.
Yeah,
And
okay.
final cut approval,
Sure.
Because I mean, they're making money off of being there, So now, if it's some amateur photographer and they say they want to film it, I would look and, like, let's say it's like okay or whatever, not great. I say, oh, you could probably film. Just give us a copy for us to use, But if it's like someone that takes pictures or video as a job or a part-time job, I would want license to use that however we want. And I think that's more than fair. I'm just annoyed
Okay,
that
interesting.
photographers feel entitled to take photos of private gigs. Why should they have that right, Em?
Everyone does it,
I
though.
know, but
Like,
what? But
everyone
why?
does it on their phones,
Well,
because
see,
there's no sign saying you can't.
but there often is.
I have not been to a show, I don't think, ever, where there are prominent no photography photos or signs.
I've been to 100 shows like that. Any show at a Live Nation venue has that exact sign.
Oh, I've never seen it.
But even at a punk gig, look, is
Interesting.
it like I don't mind fans doing it, that's
Right.
fine.
Yeah.
But I mean professional photographers or
Oh, sorry.
semi-professional
Okay.
photographers or videographers. If a fan, like, the fact that matters, if fans are taking pictures, that actually helps me out a lot, because it spreads the word and everything. But if it's
Of
a pro
course.
or semi-pro, why should they get in for free for photos that they own? If anything, they should pay me. Give me $500 and you can take pictures.
What if they got in for free and then they gave you the rights to the photos?
Flat out? That's fine. And the fact of the matter is, in that case, I would be even cool and I would give them a license to use them in their portfolio, maybe even sell them.
Interesting.
I'm just so annoyed that out of all the various aspects in the music world, music, art, photography, photographers get the most leverage, and to me they do the least. But anyways, thanks for indulging me in that conversation, Em. I realize I come across as a hater and as a, oh, actually, speaking of the word hater, Em, check this out. And then
Yes.
we'll get back to the thing. Here is your words of wisdom, not for the week, not for the day, not for the month, for the year. So check this out.
Ooh. Okay, for the year, let's hear him.
I know this young lady who happens to be a stripper. I didn't know she was a stripper. I learned she's a stripper, right? And
Cool.
often people will think less of strippers, you know. And you know,
Not
strippers,
cool.
well, often strippers have a lot of drama in their life, you know. And strippers are always talking about haters. They're like, "You're all just haters," or whatever, you know.
Of
This
course.
particular stripper, she put something on her Instagram that is really one of the most interesting and I would say lightning things I've seen this month, maybe this year. When she uses the word hate, she's referring to haters, not like racial hatred, but haters, right?
Okay.
Ready? Check this out, Em.
All right,
You
let's hear it.
can't hate your way into being happy. What do you think of that, Em? What do you think of that?
Those are very good words of wisdom. I
And
like it. I really like it.
that's something that I need to think about my, 'cause I can be a little bit of a hater or mad or jealous. You know what I mean? So true.
Sure.
So true. So there you go, Em, for wisdom from strippers. We ought to make like a
Hell
podcast or a
yeah.
TV show, Wisdom from Strippers. So anyways,
Why not? Like, they have some good life advice, honestly.
they've certainly had experiences most people never have. So there you go. So
Sure.
anyways, enough about strippers, Em, and photographers. Let's wrap up this long-winded spiel. So the final gig, the final part, Ghetto Defendant, Kepi, Aura, Jay, Vinny. What song do you think they opened with?
Ooh, I'm trying to think of everything that has been played before. Ooh, do, do, do. Can I have a hint?
Big tune, big tune.
Big tune. London Calling hasn't been played yet.
Exactly. They opened with London
London
Calling.
Calling.
Perfect opener. I mean, perfect,
Hell
absolutely
yeah.
perfect. You know, absolutely perfect.
Definitely.
And so I'm trying to pull up the set list right here. So they opened with London Calling. Kepi was singing, no guitar, Kepi, just singing. You know, Kepi's the man. He's weird. He's the man. I've seen Kepi, actually, when I lived in the Bay Area, I saw him a bunch of times. Let me think. How do you think Kepi was? M.
Amazing.
Kepi was out of this world. Kepi is
Yeah.
the man. Kepi is the greatest. Like the entire, I always kind of liken Kepi to Pee Wee Herman because he's skinny. He kind of sounds like Pee Wee Herman. I don't know if he likes that or not. But the entire gig, M. The entire gig. Even when he's standing still, he's vibrating around the stage. He's jumping up. He's squatting down. He's like a nonstop dynamo that is buzzing around the stage the entire show. He was so into it. He's like leaning down into the audience. He's swinging. He sounded great. He had all the. Oh, he was awesome. Here's the set list: London Calling, Clash City Rockers, Safe European Home, Stay Free, and Vinny sang Stay Free, which I thought was kind of cool. Police on My Back, amazing. Bank Robber with extended dub section with just Aura and Vinny doing extended dub. It was awesome. Hateful, Rudy Can't Fail, Lose This Skin, which I think was Kepi that pointed out. This is the only Clash song not sung by any member of the Clash, as of course, Time and Dog on vocals. Oh, and Jay actually had the story about how I didn't even know this. I think it was the Slackers opened for Joe Strummer back in the day, and this guy came in and they were ready to throw him out. They're like, "Who's this guy hanging out in the backstage? They're going to throw him out." And then Jay was like, "I think that's Time and Dog." And they're like, "Are you Time and Dog?" And it was. And they actually used to
Oh.
cover Lose This Skin to Slackers, which I didn't know. And then he gave them a unique version of Lose This Skin that he wrote that was never recorded for the Slackers to use. Then they did Guns of Brixton, Career Opportunities, Clamp Down. And then they ended with Death or Glory. And the entire show, so Aura was a drumming machine. You know, he drummed in the topper style, you know, kind of the fast boom, 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 boom style.
Yeah.
Jay was amazing in that he did both like the Joe Strummer hard striking, but the Mick Jones melody. Vinny held down the bass super low, super heavy. And Kepi was just astoundingly good, just bouncing across the stage and hitting all the lyrics. And it was great. People were blown away. People were dancing the entire time. They leave the stage,
Yes.
and so you know, at punk music gigs, we don't really do encores really because there's usually not time. But this time, for once, we only had four bands, so people started chanting one more song. And I kind of started because I knew there was going to be one more song, mind you. And I realized right then is I knew there was going to be one more song. And I realized like literally like 20 seconds before clamp down or whatever. I'm like, oh, after it's over, because it's not usually encore, people might just start leaving, which will totally, So I'm like, what? I'm like, I'm squatting down. I'm like, one more song, one more song. And people started going, one more song. So they came back out and they did a surprise. And I'm not sure everybody got the surprise, but it was Rush by Big Audio Dynamite. If I had my time again, I would do it all the same. And it was really just a great way to catch people off kilter. Of course, Big Audio Dynamite is Mick Jones and the Clash after the Clash. And I love that song, and it was super danceable and super poppy. Then, we had to keep people were having fun. I'm like, we gotta keep the politicals into it, political vibe into it. So Danbert came back on stage and by himself sang along with the crowd the day the Nazi died. And he was like, it's sad that this song is more relevant than it was when we wrote it. So everyone sang along to the day the Nazi died. Then Ghetto Defender came back on stage and played Mouthful of Shit by Chumbawamba. Then the grand encore, Kay came on stage, and Danbert, Kepi, Aura, Jay, Vinny, and Kay all did Tub Thumper. I get knocked down, but I get up again. While that kicked off, Karabo and I threw about 200 balloons into the crowd, and then I ran upstairs and from the balcony threw 35 pool noodles onto the crowd. And despite my
Oh, nice.
diatribe against the videographer, there's video of this. The crowd is just going nuts. Danbert is jumping up and down and freaking out. He was so happy, which was rad. There's
Awesome.
pool noodles. There's balloons flying all about. People are whacking each other. They're throwing pool balloons at each other, and it was just the craziest, most explosive night and end to a summer soirée ever. And people were literally blown away. Online, someone put like, "This is the best surprise encore I've ever seen," which it was. And then people were just blown away and totally thrilled by the end of the gig. And it was like just really, it was really like just the perfect ending to the evening that blew people. I could not believe how good Ghetto Defender was. After the gig was over, I saw Aura upstairs and I said, "Did you, Em, you be me, I'll be Aura of the Slackers. Say,
Okay.
did you know you were going to be that good?"
Did you know you're gonna be that good?
Yes, we did. And
Perfect.
like, I didn't even realize this is Kepi, Jay, and Aura. No, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. Aura, Jay, and Vinny had been practicing like a bunch of times because they felt, and I didn't even know this, they felt a grave responsibility to get it correct. So they were like I think they're just gonna kind of throw together something, which would have been fine. They were like super well, like a full real band, super well oiled because they knew they had to get it right, and they knocked it out of the park times seven. It was amazing. Kepi, on his part, said he worked harder for this gig than he ever did before, learning the songs. He said this is the hardest thing he's ever worked on. And then he only did one practice with them the day before. And it is because he had to fly out from Sacramento or wherever he lives, or maybe he lives in Arizona now, wherever. And they had one practice and they were astoundingly good. Astoundingly good. It was great. It was a magical evening in every sense. It was really an amazing gig.
That's awesome.
And I don't know how I can time myself. I mean, I gotta do Summer Soirée 10, right? I mean, I can't stop at 9. I have to do 10, right? I have some ideas. I don't know how I can every year I'm like, I don't know how I can stop myself, Dwarves and Zorn, how can I top that? Well, Joe Jack Tackle Bizarre Ramones. Well, how can I top that? Dwarves and School ED. Well, how can I top that? A special one-time only Clash gig. So it was really, people were absolutely blown away. People were thrilled. And it was such a good feeling to have this thing I've been working on for 8 months, really a year almost, and have more moving parts than anything I've ever done before pull off and be amazing. And I only lost about $80 total, which is great. It was astoundingly good. Word to the wise, and not in the immediate future, but in the somewhat near distant future, if people were into this gig, they might be happy again. So yeah. Trying to think of anything. Something else. And what do I do next year? What do I do next year?
Ooh. Okay, you definitely.
I've got some ideas.
What are your ideas? Can you say them?
No, I don't want to say it. It's gonna be a surprise. So, but I've got some cool ideas. We'll see. It's a little too early, so I think it's a little too early to start thinking about it because it's tough to book bands that far out. But that being said, there's something before the end of the year in the works. We'll see if it pans out. I give it a 50-50 right now. I would love for it to work out. I said I wasn't gonna do any more concerts this year, but I mean between the Dez show and this show, I've got an idea for a show that I've been wanting to do for like 3 or 4 years. It hasn't been able to materialize. And I'm always bouncing forth between these two things. If not now, then when, right? But you
Yeah.
can't do everything. Like with the Dez show, I was gonna do like I said, well, I'm doing SummerSlam right now, I'll do Dez next year. But I thought, you know what? People's plans change, people get interest, people lose interest. I'll do Dez right now because it's on the table right now. Let's do it. And I'm so happy I did because that show was amazing. And so I've got an idea for a show before the end of the year. We'll see if it happens. And on one hand, Em, I could be using that time and effort in other places, you know. But on the other hand, it's something I've been wanting to do. So if not now, then when? You know what I mean? So what do you? There's only you only have so much time in your life, you know. And of course, words that Warren Buffett said always stuck with me. What you say no to is more important than what you say yes to. And my issue, Em, is I say yes to almost everything, you know. But I don't know, Em. I don't know.
It's one of those things. It's you got to go with your gut, and then you always like feel good about the decisions you've made, right? Most of the time.
Maybe most of the time.
Yeah.
Where I will so if I do the show for the end, that means I've been working on a show pretty much for the entire year. Summer Soiree 9, Desk at the End, and this other show, which I'm not like last year. I was so happy to be done after Summer Soiree 8 because then I had like 5 months where I had to worry about a show. You know, it's a lot of worry and a lot of work. But on the other hand, when it's happening and after it's over, the memories are priceless. So who knows? Oh, but here's one thing about this, Em. This was a little disappointing. It's, you know, Summer Soiree 8, you know, it was six bands. And if you know, I was able to live in the moment. It felt like it was a long time, and it was. You know, it was like a 6 hour, well, not a 6 hour show, but it was a long show. This one,
Yeah.
sadly for me, Em, was over before it started. Like it was over. I'm like, I can't believe it was over already. And so I tried to drink in as much as I could, but because I was doing so much running around, I wasn't really able to drink it in as deep as I would have liked to, especially the Chumbawamba set. So in which case I'm happy there's video so I can go back and actually see what happened, you know. So that's always dualities. When you throw a show, it's kind of tough to really drink it in because you got to work behind the scenes, you know.
Oh, totally.
And I still can't get over. And remember we had that guy over. It was like Love Fest or whatever it was, or like Virginia is for Lover Fest or whatever. You remember that guy?
Yeah.
And he was. I was like. Don't you get like super nervous before a show and aren't you like stressed out? And he was like, no. I'm like, what? You like I have no idea how that guy does that, Em. No idea.
He's just too cool.
He was like, no, I don't worry about
No.
anything. I'm like, what? You know, so that's Summer Soiree 9, total blast. I don't know how I keep topping myself. So it was pretty rad. It was pretty rad. So I don't know, Em, do you want to do some news or do you want to push it till next week?
How
We
many
have a
do we
guest next
have?
week.
Do we
If
have
we
a
have
guest
a
next week?
if we don't, maybe we should push it till next week. Let's take a look here.
I don't think we have a guest next week, but I haven't checked the thing for a bit. The master list.
The master list. Let me take a look here.
Oh,
I think
private.
we don't. Let's see here. We used to have it like anchored, but now it's like not anchored anymore.
Facebook is stupid. Like,
Facebook is stupid.
it's nothing that any of us did. I know that.
It looks like no guests next week.
Okay, do you want to do news next week then?
Yeah, because we're already an hour and a half in, so let's push it till next week. How about that?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, Em. Well, that's that. And I guess when will we see the people, Em?
We'll see them next week with the news.